Thank you very much, Shanna, and thank you, Lewis, as well. Really helpful presentations and remarks. So I think what I'll do again is just I'm going to check to see if there are any quick 1 to 2 clarifying questions. Then I will check in to see if Gary's been able to join us. If Gary has not, we'll go ahead and open for the fuller Q&A with our state reps. And if Gary has, then we'll move forward and hear his remarks as well. I see Michelle's hand.
Yeah, thanks, Stacy, and thanks to Shanna and Lewis. And Lewis, great to hear your voice again for that overview of the cobia fishery. Brings back many flashbacks for me, I have to admit. I did have one quick question about the reporting permit. So Shanna, you mentioned that failure to report obviously results in revocation of that permit for the following year, noting 2,400 upset anglers. Is there a time frame at which those anglers who have failed to report would be eligible again to register for that permit? Thanks.
Hey, Michelle. Yeah, it's only just for that year. So anglers that are ineligible for 2020 can actually apply for the permit again in 2021. Another thing that I think that is important to note, and we tend to do with, there are just some guys out there that are just sweet people. They're like, I'm so sorry, I forgot to, report, is you can go out on the boat with any captain that has a permit. So if you were a guy that got a permit last year, didn't report because you didn't think you have to, because someone else on the boat had a permit and reported for you, you can still go out this year. This is just a way of kind of trying to drive home that we really, like, they asked for the permit specifically so that they could achieve better reporting. And without them actually reporting, the program isn't going to work. So, but yeah, it's just the one year.
Thank you very much, Shanna. I don't see any more immediate questions. So let me take just a moment to ask if Gary has been able to join the line. Gary, are you with us? Are you one of our call-in users by chance? And if you are, please be sure to click *6 to unmute so that we know you're here. All right, I think unfortunately we're probably in the position of having to hear from Gary at one of our later meetings. We will certainly accommodate him on any of our future agendas so that we can be sure to get that perspective. Similarly, I know John Maniscalco is currently with us, but for no guaranteed amount of time. So John, I just wanted to give you the opportunity with no pressure to see if you had any sort of immediate remarks. And of course, as I've promised to you as well, we're very happy to have you joining one of our future agendas as well. But John, if you want to just introduce yourself and let us know if you have some initial thoughts you'd like to share, I want to invite you to do that. You are on mute though, John, if you want to. Oh, there you go.
Hi, everyone. I've had the pleasure to work with a number of you. I don't think I have anything especially unique to add to the conversation today. I think many of us who use the data regularly are still kind of struggling to fit this new MRIP and the change in the magnitude of the estimates into management, and we still struggle with the believability of the scale of some of the estimates. Recreational data, recreational harvest estimates, especially for some of these fisheries that are rather large, the scale of the estimates and their impact on management and the assessments has a larger impact on the public's perception of how well we're doing. I think the black sea bass, the issues we face with black sea bass regarding the assessment sciences, it was a little bit behind in catching up and us having a working stock assessment to manage the species with, combined with some highly volatile estimates even before this latest generation of MRIP estimates, has really challenged management and done a bit of damage, I think, to the public perception of fisheries management. And I think we have quite a few years of digging ourselves out from underneath, and it doesn't sound like that problem is unique to black sea bass. It seems like a number of people have fisheries that have been challenged by MRIP or recreational harvest estimation. There's been a bit of focus on this concept of in-season management, and I think the current way we estimate harvest would make that very difficult, both because it would kind of put a premium on partial year estimates, put a premium on preliminary data versus final data, and also at the timing issues that many of the previous speakers have brought up. I think to really move forward with any kind of an in-season management option would require much greater buy-in to the idea of kind of real-time reporting from private anglers, which seem to be the biggest driver of recreational harvest and catch these days. I wish I had some more better prepared thoughts, but those are just the things that have been bouncing around my head since I learned of this panel. So thanks for the chance to speak.
Thank you very much, John. And certainly we will give you that opportunity. We'll make sure that we have a chance on a future agenda to hear from you if you'd like to prepare some additional remarks. But since I knew that you were able to join the line for some portion of today, and seeing you there as part, you know, throughout this conversation, I thought I would just check in and see if you had any immediate remarks, and I sure appreciate you taking that opportunity. So with that, I will open it up now for additional questions until our break at 3 o'clock. And again, I'll be looking for folks to use the hand raise function in the participant list, and happy to take questions from both the committee and our audience. Louise, I see you have a question, go ahead. We cannot hear you. You appear to be connected to the audio, but we can't actually hear your question.
How about now?
Now we can hear you.
Yes, that was the star six. Yes, thank you for that. Yes, thank you, Stacy, and thank you to all the participants in the state panel. This was really, really great information you provided, a lot of great perspective. So, again, on behalf of the academies and the committee, I really want to thank all of you for putting this together. We know that to some extent, this is a little bit of a short notice invite, so we sure appreciate you putting all these thoughts and presentation together. Anyway, my question is really for anybody from any of the states, is really trying to get an idea of any supplemental surveys that you might have in place right now, addressing specific stocks or specific fisheries. By supplemental, I mean something that you do on top of the regular, that is the more general survey. And if you have that, I would like to hear what they are, and then what would be the data gaps that you're trying to fill, if there's something particular that you're trying to address with one of the supplemental surveys.
Do any of our state reps like to jump on that first? We've got Angela, Jeff, or Shanna.
Yeah, I can take a shot at this. So, I briefly mentioned our striped bass bonus program. What this is, I think I said, is in New Jersey, striped bass is a game fish. There's no commercial harvest. The commercial quota we get from ASMFC, we reallocate it to the recreational fishery as a separate fishery, essentially. It's a concurrent season usually, but it's a separate season. And so what we're doing is everyone has to register with the program, and they receive one tag. And they're allowed to usually catch one fish above the regular bag limit. Often it has a different size limit for that bonus fish. When they catch one, they have to affix the tag, and they have to report that catch, and they can get another tag. So they get one tag at a time, but they can use multiple tags during the season. With mandatory reporting if they want to get subsequent tags. The intent of the program is so that we can use the fish. The tag is so that we can track the harvest. I'm sure that there is non-compliance. They only affix the tag if there's a CO looking over their shoulder, or they affix it. The tags are such that if you affix it properly, it can't be reused. But I'm sure there are ways that you can sort of attach it and then unattach it if you can get home without a CO knocking on your door. As far as data gaps, I'm not sure of any other than, you know, the compliance issue, which isn't a gap, it's a compliance issue. We also have volunteers who voluntarily provide effort information, even if they don't catch a bonus fish. So we do get CPUEs, we get effort information, things like that. We as far as I can tell, and I'm not too familiar with the program, I've never had to deal with striped bass in my 15, 16 years in New Jersey. So we have a whole team. They don't need me. I'm not intimately familiar with the program, but we collect a lot of information, and I can't think of any data gaps off the top of my head. Luis, your question was specific to any specific species. I also mentioned our volunteer angler survey, it's a general survey. It's a volunteer angler survey for anything that people want to report. The problem, and that's been going since about 2008, I believe. And we do get people who use it. The usership is not fantastic. The intent behind the survey was we've all heard the, how can those estimates be right? Because MRIP didn't sample me. So you have to, everyone is feeling unloved because their fish aren't included in the estimate. So we put this survey together, this volunteer angler survey together, as an opportunity for the folks who, you know, as an opportunity for folks to volunteer their information and get included in the management process. We collect all of the same information that MRIP does. So trip information, when did you go? Where did you go? What were your target species? How long were you out? Mode, area, length, things like that. Catch information. So what were your target species? How many of each fish did you catch? How many of each fish did you keep, discard dead? And then there's an opportunity to provide lengths, both for harvested as well as discarded fish. So the two goals really would be to complement MRIP and, you know, give people the opportunity to provide their own data to get used in the management process. And as we've said a couple of times, those discard lengths are really useful. We get some through the Type 9 for hire ride-alongs through MRIP, but the sample size is really pretty low. But through the volunteer angler survey in New Jersey, I know Connecticut has one, multiple states have them. Angela talked about the ones in Maryland. That discard length information is used regularly in our regional stock assessments. Summer flounders, black sea bass, tautog, weak fish, bluefish, you know, all of the main recreational species, we cobbled together the volunteer angler survey data. the one concern, at least for the one in New Jersey, is usership. We give everyone the opportunity. It's available year round. There's a link on our website, but we usually only get about 200 hits a year, between 200 and 400 or 500 hits a year. And a lot of times 100 of those hits are the same guy. So how representative is that sample? And you know, this volunteer angler survey was my pet project. And even a few years ago, a colleague and I took Dr. Lorenzen's class through University of Florida, and our project was promoting this volunteer angler survey. And so we did this whole promotion. We surveyed the rec anglers and said, hey, what can we do to make this better? And it worked for about 6 months. And as soon as we stopped pestering them, they stopped using it. So that is, you know, the data is useful. When I've looked at it in the past, we get very complimentary. The estimates, the catch rates, the length frequency distributions are consistent with what we see in MRIP, but it's not working to the extent of increasing sample size the way that I had hoped. So that was a long answer, Luis. I don't know if I hit what you were looking for or not.
Luis, unfortunately, you're muted again.
Yeah, you're on mute.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you.
Okay,
yeah.
Look. Yes, your answer was spot on, Jeff. Thank you so much. I know it was long, but it was thorough. So all the information was there, and I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Luis. Would any of our other speakers like to respond to Luis's question before we move on?
I was just going to say a lot of my comments are similar to Jeff's. Like, we've tried to supplement with our volunteer angler surveys, and without a lot of legwork, the participation just always falls off. And so there is a lot of good information there. In some cases, they probably, like I said, ours are all species specific, but you know, catch rates can be good and useful when the participation's high. So I think that's all I wanted to add, mainly just echoing Jeff's comments.
Thank you very much, Angela.
And from Virginia, same thing. We also allow through the Virginia Saltwater Journal, you can report voluntarily any species, really. But even making a non-voluntary angler survey, as we've done with the cobia permit, leads to a lot of the same usefulness as the volunteer angler survey, and the same headaches as a volunteer angler survey. I don't know if we've seen much added benefit between making it mandatory and leaving it voluntary, except for the fact that reporting rates have most definitely increased. I believe last year we were at about 67% reporting rate, and then we first started in 2016, I think it was like 25%. So reporting rates have definitely increased, but the data that are collected from those volunteer angler surveys are still really the utility in them thus far has been mostly those discard lengths, at least as far as stock assessments are concerned.
Thank you, Shanna. I'm going to turn now. We've got several hands raised, and I'm going to try to keep us from going too far over our time here. But I'm going to turn to Kai and then Mike. And then if we have time, Jeff White has his hand raised. As does, let's see here, Mary Ellen Bordeaux as well. So we'll try to get to Jeff and Mary Ellen if time allows. Otherwise, we'll certainly be happy to take those additional questions in the 4 to 4:30 session, if not before our 3 o'clock break. So Kai, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. Just very quickly to start, Jeff, I do remember your survey well, and you actually, I think, sent it to every single registered angler in New Jersey, which was a great effort. And even then, yeah, you don't get all that much back. We also know from the studies that Chelsea Crandall in our group has done is actually the people who do participate in these surveys are not the people who are dissatisfied. It's the people who love science and want to contribute. So you're not catching the people who are complaining that they're not being asked in the voluntary surveys, unfortunately. But I have a question about the COBIA permit. I thought that was really interesting, and I was wondering whether, you know, after this change in COBIA management, and that's just for Virginia, is that right? But after that change, so do you get the sense that the stakeholder satisfaction with COBIA management has actually improved as a result of this this transition? And I appreciate that you may not have hard sort of social science data on that, but I would be interested to know what the sense is in terms of satisfaction, but also how good is the reporting that you get out of that that COBIA permit program, if you know.
Yeah, so to start off with the first question, no, it wasn't just for Virginia. That was a shift away from the South Atlantic Council management to ASMFC management. We're just more speaking in terms of Virginia's perspective as far as, you know, Lewis kind of talking in the beginning. I think there was a lot of frustration from our anglers when COBIA fell under council management. As he was saying, you know, there was a fear there that the fishery would close prior to COBIA even entering Virginia state waters. And so I think, yes, overall, there would be, you know, again, without having hard social science data or anything to back this up, but I think in general, the anglers are more pleased with having ASMFC manage than the councils manage. They also, you know, as I kind of talked about at the end of my presentation, a lot of things that we hear from anglers are the fact that they appreciate when management measures stay in place for a long time. I think something we hear a lot is this term management whiplash, where there's a lot of frustration surrounding seasons and bag limits and size limits and things like that changing quickly. Where stakeholders don't believe that we're kind of letting these management measures take time to kind of sit and stew. I was gonna pull up, hold on just a moment. I am pulling up some information that I have regarding our reporting rates. So back in 2016, when we first started, actually our reporting rate was at about 8%, and that was when it was voluntary reporting for that permit. In 2017, we were looking at 59%, 2018 was 62%, and those were both during the time period when we said that it was mandatory, but there wasn't really any issue for being non-compliant. So we had folks calling us, you know, way past the reporting requirement deadlines because they couldn't get a permit. And then they would say, oh, yeah, let me report right now. But when we instituted mandatory ineligibility in 2019, we were at a 67% reporting rate. And obviously this year, I just don't quite know yet where we're going to fall. I will say that all signs point to our reporting rates this year being much higher than they previously have been. We've sort of been tracking it in time, and the staff have really been working incredibly hard, like huge shout out to my staff this year, on really spreading the news. We're sending emails every single month. We're making Facebook posts. We've created decision trees. They've made a website. They've really done a bang up job of trying to show people that they need to report on this permit and how those data could be useful in the future if we continue with high numbers of reporting. So that's kind of where we stand right now. We're hopeful in seeing what 2020 looks like once the season closes in actually just a few days.
Thank you, Shanna. I'm gonna try to keep us moving right along just because we are running into the break, but I did promise that we would turn to Mike Wayne for his question, and then I'll ask Mary Ellen Gordo and Jeff White. Perhaps we may be able to take your questions right after the break or at the 4 o'clock session. So if you don't mind just holding on to those, and we'll see what we're looking like at the end of the break. But Mike, if you have a very quick question, I'll turn it over to you now.
Yeah, can you guys hear me okay?
We sure can. Thank you, Mike.
Perfect, thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to ask a quick question. One of the things that's used quite frequently in the Mid-Atlantic is a concept called conservation equivalency. And I guess I'll direct this question to Angela in the interest of time, because she talked a lot about this. And the concept involves achieving some sort of harvest reduction, and then the states work within their fisheries and the MRIP data set to put together a set of recreational measures, bag limits, seasons, and size limits to achieve that level of reduction. But there's some concern about using the MRIP data at that level because of the additional uncertainty that that brings. And so I was wondering, Angela, could just talk a little bit more about sort of the repercussions of doing that, and what are the workarounds that you guys use to address the additional uncertainty of using the MRIP data at that level?
Sure. So, you know, obviously the PSEs increase as you start using the data at lower levels, and it's definitely something to be aware of when looking at those sorts of analyses. I would say it's never a great fit with, in some ways, you know, if we had data shorter time periods or better estimates at those finer levels, it would certainly help increase the certainty in some of those analyses. I know for striped bass in the past, with some of our conservation equivalency proposals, we've tried, you know, with the most recent one, we always run into this issue of year class strength and, you know, whether using any single set of years or individual year is most representative of what the fishery is going to do in the future. So I know for striped bass, effort was made. You know, we knew there was a strong year class coming in, so we were trying to use the length frequencies and information from maybe some years where fish were of a similar size. There was a previous large year class. In some of these analyses, I know we've tried also, for lack of a better word, like averaging or combining some length frequencies. You might look at multiple years of data. I know in the past we've done that as well. So because we know year-to-year variability can be high, we look instead at like a 10-year period. So then you're trying to capture some of those, the variability due to weather and changes in fishing effort and year class strength, and trying to use it in that way to mitigate some of those concerns and issues that you have. Did that answer the question, I think? I think that was all the parts of it.
Mike, did that get to your question?
Yeah, and then the other part of it was like, how has the performance been at, like, you conduct this analysis, you try to constrain the harvest, then on the back end, obviously you have some evaluation procedure about how you guys did. I just wanted you to share sort of how that goes.
Again, I think it's hard. So historically what ASMFC has done has used, you know, an individual year as a benchmark, and often it's, you know, the years that went to the assessment. So it might be the terminal year of the data from the assessment, and that's what we're trying to cut back from. But as I said, any year in the future might not be the same. And I know Maryland in particular, through some of these evaluations, has been banged up, like I said, with year classes moving through, right? You cut off 2 inches and all the previous analyses suggest that's enough. You've raised your minimum size 2 inches and you still go over this number that was used in 2017 and it's now 2019. And so I think that is something that the commission, at the management board level at the commission, they've been struggling with, is how do you, for fisheries where you're not under an ACL, like in the council, like how do you judge your success with management measures and the uncertainty that goes into using the MRIP data for these analyses. And that's currently being discussed.